Hi, welcome to the Brown and Happy podcast. In our time together, I will share what it means to be brown and happy. For many of us, everything looks good on paper, but we're still not happy and living fulfilled lives. It's time to change this, and I can help. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Gayal. Hello, lovely ladies. We have another special guest, a good friend of mine, who's a fellow coach, a fellow brown coach, not exactly in the same space as I am in. And I thought it'd be really helpful for us to explore how coaching can benefit in a space where there's leadership. So my friend Niharika Wundava, and I hope I said that right because we practiced a couple of times ahead of time. And you guys know how important it is for me to make sure that our names are said correctly. And we've talked about this in the past. I literally gave a talk in front of a bunch of coaches about my name, and Niharika was there for this. So we met actually with our business coach. We both hired the same business coach. And automatically, when I was in the room, I was like, ooh, brown person. I love this because when I walked in, I mean, there was diversity, but it's very unique to see another brown woman in this space. And so I love telling you guys how when I started this journey, I hired all white coaches, and my white coaches were the biggest advocates for me and saying, who better to help your people, Payal, than you? Right? Because you get them. And so in this room, we had a couple other coaches, and you guys have already heard from Priyanka, and then Amruti's coming up soon. So this is kind of fun. These were all like buddies from our business coaching. So yeah, different topics. We'll talk about different things. So Niharika, would you please introduce yourself and tell us a little about yourself?
Yes, Payal. It is so exciting to be here. You and I have quite a great relationship and love obsession between ourselves and what we do and kind of how you and I show up in rooms. It's like very reflective and very similar. And I love our girls that you just talked about. You know, we gravitate towards each other. I mean, let's just be honest. We look around the room. We see who is connecting with us, who's going to reach out to us, and who is going to exclude us, because it is such a common experience in our lives to look around and figure out who's going to exclude us or who's going to embrace us. And then we show up in our full force and our full self in those private environments when we are really, really seen and welcomed and accepted. And I'm very certain that is very similar with you. I think so. I am Niha Wunava. I live in Durham, North Carolina, completely on the other side of where you live. I'm on the East Coast. I coach in the field of leadership. So my background is with working directly with CEOs from the very, very beginning of my career. And then before that, if we rewind it a little bit more, I had the pleasure and the honor of working with visionary teachers, professors, and leaders in my education who saw the need to create leaders that could go toe to toe, ask really big questions, look at the data, analyze things, and then create value and opportunity in those gaps and in those spaces. So I think very strategically. I think about corporate settings and complex organizations. I also co-founded and operate a private clinic here. So I have a healthcare background, which means you're working in very complex spaces. And with a lot of diversity at some levels, but not at the top levels. So my mission, along with yours, is to empower professionals, particularly women and people of color, to use everything that serves them well and let go of what doesn't serve them so that they can really accelerate and rise to the top. And once they get there, be extremely effective in what they create through execution so that they can get done faster, hit it out of the park, and be at home with their family and their kids and their partners, because that's what they care about. That's why they sacrificed. That's why they went in these demanding career fields so that they could be great moms and have a great lifestyle. And what's missing right now are some of those personal pieces. And you and I are both dedicated to making sure that these amazing professionals also have a big, big personal piece of their own life. So that is how you and I are so similar.
Okay. This is why I invited her. Okay. You guys are listening, right? She's amazing. I'm obsessed with her. I have like a girl crush on her because the vision she has for our people and our community, it's not just a vision. She lives that out, right, in her own life. And I think that we all do, you know, but it's nice to see other people who look like you believe in personal development the way you do. Because if I were to enter a room, a conference with a bunch of physicians, boom, half of them are doctors, half of them are brown. Like it's like a normal thing. But to go into this space and find people who look like you, who believe in this work, that is out of the box, right? That is something that we're not used to. And this is kind of what drew me to her. So tell me, how did you get into this work, right? I think that's really important for the audience to know, like, well, yeah, why?
Yeah. So because I have always worked in strategy and because I've always tied strategy to operations at that high C-suite level with the CEOs, with the CFOs, with honestly a bunch of really great, high-powered, smart white men, I, from a very young age, like this is like 2 decades of me in these spaces, working directly with these people and developing really strong working relationships. But what I realized is that so many people don't ever have that. I have 2 brothers. They're magnificent. I was very close with my father, great relationship with my darling mom. And my brothers and my dad really allowed me to show up. And I probably reflected a lot of their male behaviors and their success behaviors from the get-go in my household. But a lot of people, brown women, Indian women, they don't see that. They don't have that. And if there's a very strong female energy in the home, they don't really get the balance of the male energy and the creative energy and bringing those 2 things together. So I would go into these spaces and I would really direct that stuff. I would really own it and come in there with the power. And what I realized is that there were a lot of other people that didn't do that, didn't know how to do that. So they got to a point in my career where I noticed it. And it's so natural for me that I don't even think that it's not natural, number one, for other people, or that they didn't even have the development or the exposure in their family unit, let alone double development in their education. And then on top of that, in my mentorship and my internships that I had. So I have this like quadruple experience really that I thought was all just natural. But then when I was coming up and looking at the data and the research that show that women don't get promoted early on, so automatic sag and dip, and then they get stuck in the middle, particularly women of color and brown people. And the issue is with that, it's coming to a head because post the pandemic, women and the data show are really expressing that they want to have high powered, high level, ambitious careers, and they are being overlooked. So now there's even more of an opportunity and a gap. So the entire time I was in the corporate settings and healthcare settings, I always knew I wanted to be in talent and development. I just thought it was always organizational. I did physician engagement and employee engagement. I didn't know that we could ever go so granular to this level of personal development because coaching kind of was stigmatized in organizations like in the 80s and 90s. It was like you did it interventionally if you had like an anger management problem. And what we know now about coaching and the data show that it is exceptional at creating awareness and personal change and control. 3 things that oftentimes women can be too harsh on themselves with the awareness and then not feel like they have the tools or the ability to take control. So they feel powerlessness and hopelessness. And we know that systems create that problem. Institutions also feed into that problem, and also cultures and organizations do. So I was like, by golly, let's do something about it. If I have the next 2-3 decades to really make an impact on the granular level, on that one-on-one level and organizational and systematic change, I'm here for it. And so it was like really a culmination of a seed I had in my brain for over and all of those two decades to now create a complete program that is dedicated and designed to accelerate women at a very fast level.
That is so good that you say that, because you know how you're talking about how you noticed that some women, they didn't have that belief in themselves. They didn't advocate, right? Those other women, that's me. Like, I was that person who didn't have that ability to advocate yet, right? I didn't know it was possible. And so my journey, as you know, has been like so different, where I was them, right? And then I learned that there is opportunity for me to also have what others have. And I had to believe it. And once I believed that it was possible, I just had to break down the layers, right? And the layers that I'm talking about are the ones that you mentioned, the layers of the institution, the layers of the culture, the layers of the family, the tradition, all the things, until I could understand, like, oh, this is why I am the way I am. And also, I don't have to be here forever, right? Like, this is the best I could do with what I had. And now I can learn new tools, right, that can help me open up doors that I never thought were possible for me to open. And so when you're saying this, I love focusing on, like, you know, what is it about your childhood? Like, what did you experience as, and so I coach like basically mostly women. And so what did you experience as a little girl? You know, what were you told? What was the unsaid kind of message that was being told to you as a little girl? And for me, what I remember, a lot of my clients, it's this idea of like, if you work hard and you go down this checklist, you're going to be happy. Right. And that checklist was a lot of like career stuff. Like, my parents were like, you need to have a job that is respectable and is guaranteed that you don't have to work in like labor work like we did. Right. So my parents' business, they owned a motel, like they physically were working to make the money. And they're like, we want you to have that, what they think is like easier money, right? Where it's like, you can sit, you can work. Now, yes and no, it is easier in so many ways. I have so much more than I ever dreamt of, you know, as a little girl. But that message of like, put your head down, work, and just do all the things, and you'll get what you deserve, I think that was not helpful. And also, the same checklist was available to me indirectly, at least in, even when it comes to my personal relationships and my marriage and my parenting. Like, I felt like, oh, if I just do all the hard work, then I'm going to get and receive. And that, I think, was for me the biggest like sticking point where that didn't work, right? I worked, became a doctor, did all the things, and I wasn't happy, right? I wasn't getting the promotion. I wasn't getting the salary that I, you know, hope for after all the years. So that's kind of the story that I heard. And it's interesting to see that the story that you had growing up was very different with all the men around, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was really different. It was really different. It was still education, hard work was still there at the core of it, but it was also what I think is so unique and so important is that my parents assumed success for me and my brothers. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's different than what a lot of us get as children of immigrants in this country at the time you and I were raised, and then what maybe we're seeing, we don't know yet, but that's coming up. My parents assumed great success mm-hmm. in their children as like the fundamental outcome that was going to happen. So already from there, that is an extremely positive environment. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of singing and dancing and Bollywood dancing. We were giant Amitabh Bachchan fans. Yes, both my brothers are too. And they're both physicians, very successful in their fields. And I was different. I was allowed, actually, I said earlier, to have a voice, to be also very funny. I think I am very funny, actually. And I was allowed to really express myself and my opinion. So I have very strong political bent and expression and ideas. And that was fostered in my home. And I think I have it even more than my brothers did and do. And I don't really remember, though I have not only a loud voice and volume, but I'm also very opinionated. I don't really remember a time I was told to be quiet.
What's your birth order?
I'm the second. I have an older brother, and then me, and then a younger brother.
Okay. So you're not the firstborn female.
I am not.
So that's a very interesting
female.
Yeah. Which is different too. But I like just observing that about people, because I'm a firstborn female. So it's a lot of like people pleasing, perfectionism, and like the first one to experience growing up in this country. And I think your brother did that, you know, being the first one. So it's a little bit different in that way. But I love that you said your parents assume success for you guys. My parents did the same thing. But what I think is interesting is how our parents define success.
Yes, that's probably very, very true. I think it's very true. And it was, I do believe that my parents believed that success meant that you called your shots. And a lot of times for that generation, it was medicine, because they knew that, you know, my father was in the corporate world, and there's volatility there. And there was the assumption that medicine wouldn't, but at the same time, they couldn't necessarily predict, and we couldn't then, the changes in payment structures, the changes in post-COVID stress, burnout that physicians are experiencing. When you make decisions from that kind of non-resiliency, when you think that industries aren't ever going to change, you kind of just say, well, that's the safest profession, not ever knowing. Well, you're going to have to escalate the amount you work and get your payments cut. Well, that's extremely stress creating, right? They can't know that. So I think also another thing that my parents did is that they always thought about how would we be successful anywhere?
Yeah.
Like with the MD degree, I have two management degrees, one in business administration and then one in management, public health and health services. And it was just kind of like, they did think also a little bit entrepreneurially, like where could you be successful in any system? It really wasn't to put us in a box. It was to make sure that we would never be in a box. And so those messages were also there. All three of us are very distinct in our voice. I think distinct in the lifestyle, like building out and having a lifestyle was also very important in how we were going to live our life. So it wasn't just the education. It was what we were going to do with it in our life.
So that's where the definition of success comes up, right? Because there is the, like the financial growth, the educational growth, but also the lifestyle. Right? Like they always want better for us than what they had, right? Whatever that means to each family, you know, but choices, opportunities for their grandkids too, you know, to be able to like have options. So I think a lot of this is safety, right?
Absolutely.
Like it's like, oh, it's safer for us to do things this way so that the next generation keeps having possibility and opportunity. I mean, we can never predict this, but I already tell my kids all the time, like, you guys are like, you know, living a very different life than I did. Like, I love my kids are like, are we going to the Centurion Lounge? And I'm like, oh my God, like seriously. But I love that for them. I said, good, like nice things, because then you will study, make money and pay for that yourself, you know, like in a way that you want to, right? Not as a, you know, this is something I'm seeing in our culture a lot, is like a lot of like kids who did not develop like growth outside of their families and have like kind of like this, they're dependent, a codependency, that it's like they're always going back to their parents for some reason, for like financially. Like I see that in my family, right? And so that's one of the things I keep teaching my boys is like, I want you to like nice things and also know that I'm not going to finance your nice things later, which my dad finds appalling. How could you say that to them?
I think it's a smart move.
Yeah, I know.
Smart move, because one of the beautiful things, one of our really, really successful friend, I actually saw them on Saturday night, a friend of ours said to us a few years ago that the way that cultures that are very successful transmit generational success are through stories of hardship. Mm-hmm. Like our parents, our dads, like coming with the suitcase, probably our moms coming a little bit later, et cetera, et cetera. And they built something mm-hmm. and they're teaching their children to build something. Mm-hmm. If we don't teach our children how to build, how to, what you said earlier, create choices and opportunities for themselves, what we do is we create dependency and we create neediness, mm-hmm. which is the absolute opposite. So I like to teach success and success formula at the ground level of what I think is really important. That's the antithesis to a success formula, mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. to be dependent and have somebody else like bailing you out. What we want to do and what our parents did for us is they gave us a platform, they gave us a foundation, they sacrificed, but they gave us tools that would get us bigger and better tools. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that doesn't come from being given anything. We were not given anything. We were pioneers. We were alone. Why do you and I walk into a conference room and scan the room? Because we had to create, what you said earlier, personal safety at a very, very deep level. Like we would get our butts kicked mm-hmm. if we didn't get in because we looked so different at a time when people didn't look different then, right? We were the lone, you know, one person or two people that looked really different at a time when it wasn't acceptable to look different. Right. It wasn't as diverse in this country or even politically acceptable then. And, you know, we've seen reversals in that. And so that need to make sure that we are creating really entrepreneurial thinking. I don't care if you're in medicine or not, or tech or business or wherever you are, you need to be thinking entrepreneurially, mm-hmm. out of the box, new ideas, innovatively. Mm-hmm. You can't be thinking, well, my dad is going to bail me out. My mom is going to give me this. Because it'll make you complacent. And that is what will erode our generational wealth and success in this country that we, our parents, established because we got great education. We did something with it. We created things and we're law abiding. That's like a formula for success. But if we do not continue those anecdotes and those stories with our children, they will get complacent. They will not have the generational belief that things get better and better and better that we see in some cultures and we don't see if we don't purposely share those stories.
So this enabling that happens, right, in families where we're like codependent and kind of just like over delivering for them. Yes. So that is what is so detrimental, like you say. And so one of the reasons that I find that some, and right now I'm thinking about like a bunch of people that I'm working with, it's like they have children, you know, teens, you know, older kids, whatever it is, even younger ones, that I find them like not allowing them to grow and build on their own. And it's because they don't want them to experience anything negative, right? I don't want them to feel sad. I don't want them to feel disappointed, right? And so this starts at a very young age. And I kind of go through this struggle myself because I am very aware of this work and all this stuff that I'm doing. And then you have like the grandparents, like they'd be like, oh, what did you feed them? Oh, what did you, you know, like, and it's really funny how like they think they're being helpful in this situation. And so a lot of people, they feel torn between what they want to create and then not, the kids are like, don't want them to, you know, have any bad experiences. Well, the reason that you and I are so powerful in ourselves is because we've had so many bad experiences and we thrived, right? We survived, but we also thrived. And that didn't happen overnight. And I think looking back on it, we could probably be like, oh yeah, that's what happened when I was like in seventh grade. Oh, that's what happened my first year of college. But also as like, you know, our first job, right? Like I remember like killing myself in my first job. I remember like sacrificing so much. And that was my work ethic. And also there was so much room for improvement because I wasn't advocating, right? And that I think is that tool that we're teaching people is connect with who you are, right? Because you probably have never thought about what you really want in your life, right? You probably followed the formula, right? All the equations, everything that ever you've been taught, right? And so you haven't paused. And a lot of the people, I think a lot of women are like so bogged down with everyday stuff. That's like, when am I going to think about that? Right? There is work, kids, husband, in-laws, household engineering stuff. You got to manage the help, you know? So it's like, when do I ever think about that? So this is the key, is figuring out like, who are you? What do you really want? And are you willing to take a chance on you, even if it feels uncomfortable?
Yeah. And I think that we don't create enough white space. So this is one of the first things that I like to coach my clients on, you know, leaders, super busy people, executives, entrepreneurs, people that are super overscheduled. They've only ever known to be very overscheduled. And if they haven't been overscheduled, then they were studying, you know, to take a test and to create more success. And so the first thing that has to happen is that we have to ratchet that down and purposefully. So I tell my clients, like, we're going to change your life in a 10-minute cup of coffee. Like, that is how we're going to do it. I don't expect or assign any homework before or after our sessions. We meet for 45 minutes a week. And one of the things that I think sticks with them through the 7 days until we meet again and provides that growth is that I really push this concept of white space and then thinking for those 10 minutes over that cup of coffee or, you know, hot beverage or whatever you're doing in the morning, making it a part of a routine that you enjoy where you're thinking purposefully about yourself, particularly as brown women, and where you want to go. Mm-hmm. At the core of success, in my belief, is desire. Mm-hmm. And women have suppressed their desires. We've been taught to suppress our desires. It's a part of our particular shared culture. And I want to like eradicate that. When we ratchet up through the roof our personal internal desire for our ambitions, what we enjoy, our success in our life, both personally and professionally, when your desire is in alignment with your life, you are operating at all cylinders. Mm-hmm. When your desire is super low in relation to what you want, in relationship to what your life is giving you, there's an immense gap, mm-hmm. which goes back generations. We will keep ourselves stuck and we will feel lost and drowning. So the first thing that has to go up is that we understand our desire. And we don't often even know what that is so often, but in 10 minutes with a cup of coffee and a pencil and paper, you and I know that you can get all of that out of your heart and out of your mind. You can look at it and now you can make a choice over the next 7 days to realign your time to reflect what you desire, mm-hmm. and then make it real. And so it doesn't have to be this giant problem that we can't, you know, it's like very quickly. And it just goes to the second question of, well, if you had to guess, I did this to a friend at a party this weekend. I'm like, well, if you had to guess, I don't know. If you had to guess, and then immediately the thing that he really wants as a super, super successful entrepreneur came right out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, good. Just go do that.
Well, I think part of it is, it's not that they don't know, because I feel like there's a deep down you know, knowing, but it's giving yourself permission, right? To want it, right? Because I think sometimes like it's so heavy and there's all this, like, it's like lined up, like all this, like reasons why it's not going to happen, why you can't do it, why this is not the right time, that you've already set up a case for why it's not going to work. So why would you want to do it? And am I allowed to want something? I think this is the most basic place where we start in our coaching, is like you said, the white space, but also like permission. You can want something just because you haven't seen the women in your life want something and they've normalized it. It was funny. I was watching this movie. I like catch up on like longer movies on the weekend. And it was this Hindi movie, and I had the subtitles on, but I do understand most of it. And it was about a woman. The name of the movie was Thappar, which means slap, right? And I don't know if you saw it, it's on Netflix, I think, or Prime, I can't remember. Yeah. And she, like, her husband, like, they had a great relationship, and out of nowhere, like, he was like drunk and he was acting out with his boss. So she's like pulling him back, saying, "Hey, don't do that." And he turned on and he slapped her, like, kind of just like unexpectedly, right? Like, it's like never happened before. It was like he was in the moment and he just did that. But that one thing set her off in a way where she, and I think I'm getting goosebumps right now, but like, she was like, who am I? You know, and what is this relationship? And she was like a housewife, which you said, by choice. She wanted to do all this. She, all of her happiness and joy was what his joy was, right? His goals, all his ambitions. And she's a very smart, creative woman. And she was like, "I don't love you anymore." But it took her time to understand why she was so numb. And later she goes to talk about, yes, this was a defining moment, but what's more important is, how did I get here? I'm telling you, I was like blown away. And I don't even know, I never bring up like specific things that I watch or Bollywood or whatever, but like, it's not even like these like popular kind of things everyone knows about, but like, I really sat there and I was like, oh, this is why I am who I am today, is because I was willing to look at, how did I get to where I was in my lowest point in my life? How did I contribute to it? Because it's very, I think it's very obvious to be like, oh, that person caused harm to me, or this boss won't give me the raise, or my parents, whatever. I can go down the list. But when she said, like, but how did I allow for this to be something that could even happen? Like, it changed everything. I want you to watch it. It's so good, you guys. It was so good. You can watch the subtitles, right? It's totally fine. But it got me to think about when she's talking about, no one told me explicitly that this is how I need to be as a woman, but I saw my mom, I saw my mother-in-law, I saw everybody else. And the message was, your joy is in the joy of the others around you that you love. I know. Okay. I'm literally goosebumps everywhere right now. You guys, it's so good.
Me too. Me too, because society is rising now to a different level of awareness in some spaces. And you just synopsized, that's amazing.
It's, to me, fascinating, because as an educated woman born and brought up in the United States, Los Angeles, right? Pretty diverse, you would say, not more now. So I did the same thing, mm-hmm. right? I did the same thing, but no one ever told me to do this, right? So I play small at work. I play small in my marriage. I play small everywhere, but I'm a very big person, right? And if you guys have met me in person or you see me on social media, like, I'm just like full of energy and life and light, but I suppressed that for myself because I was trying so hard to please everyone and do the thing that I saw and I thought I had to do. The only difference between the generations above and before us and now is that we're also expected to excel in career.
You're 100% right. And I just want to offer that, though even I was raised the way that I was expressing, you know, with a lot of male energy and all of that, the generational conditioning goes back so far. And I didn't I don't believe I got explicit messages. Like you said, it's what you just see, what's transferred on you from your community, from aunties, from other people, from uncles, from relatives, even just going to India every summer. But when I got married, and then later on in life, I did much of the same things that you said, because I was like, oh, but this is how, and it wasn't even like my husband directly looked at me and was like, oh, X, Y, Z. But I just was, and it happened particularly when we moved.
Mm-hmm.
When we moved and it was time for me to kind of reestablish myself. I was like, oh, I should be a certain way. I probably shouldn't be as obnoxious and loud and crazy as I was with the kids I grew up with who love and adore me to this day. I'm going on a girls' trip with them this weekend. But I was like, they can't handle it. And then you and I have very similar personalities. I was like, oh, I just assumed they can't handle it. So then I started recoiling, like over a course of like 5 to 10 years, which is like, again, none of the reason why I wanted to do this work so much is because I was like, where did I learn that? Where did I learn to start to quiet when I've had so much, you know, success in speaking and having a voice in these rooms and in these boardrooms and all this stuff? Where did I learn to play small? And how does that show up for any of us, no matter what messages we got or didn't get? So it's almost essential that we have to go out and do this work.
This is so good. And our time is up today, but I feel like we need to continue conversations in the future. Same thing happened when Priyanka came. We ended up doing two. We just did another one like later because it was so good. And I think that when you connect with somebody, there's like, this is how we talk when we get together, guys. This is amazing. I just want to tell you guys. And we get together like once every 6 months. I don't even know how it's going to be moving forward, but it's just been fascinating to like be in this space. How can people find you?
It's pretty easy. You can come to my website, which is www.nihacoaching.com. That's N-I-H-A coaching.com. You can find me on Instagram. And I also have a podcast, Brown AF, Brown Ambitious and Free, if you want to hear some musings about leadership and how to accelerate yourself and really be seen as a powerful executive leader, as a brown person, as a person of color, joining in the conversations over there, listen to what's going on. And this was fascinating, Pyle. It's awesome to just really connect on this level and share these stories and learn your perspective, how it's similar, how it's different, and how we're at the same space. You know, it's like really, really cool. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your energy. I remember when you walked right up to me, you're like, what's your full name? I'm like, it's Niharika. And you're like, well, then I will call you that from now on. And we have to get to know each other. And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah, it's true. Because everyone in the room is like, Niha. And I was like, that's not her name. And then I went up to her and I was like, is Niha your name, or what's your full name? And she's like, Niharika. But I just say Niha, you can call me Niha. I'm like, no, I'm going to call you what your name is. What do you want to be called? So that's why I introduced her as Niharika, but she goes by Niha. I also think we do that to accommodate and assimilate a lot for a lot of other people. And maybe we like that, right? So yes, we have so many stories to tell. You guys, she's amazing. Go check her out, follow her. You know, I'm inviting myself to be on her podcast right now. She doesn't know that I just said that right now, because we're going to keep going and maybe we can find some more time where we can continue these conversations or some different conversations here too. So thank you so much for joining us. We're recording this the day after Diwali. So happy Diwali.
Happy Diwali.
It's so fun. And maybe we'll talk about that next time. But hope you guys have a lovely day. Please send in any questions, any topics that you want us to discuss. If there's something that we said that triggered something for you, or, you know, you don't agree or don't understand, like, let's talk about it. So have a lovely day. Hope to see you guys next week. Hey, if you're finally ready to start being happy, I invite you to join my list. This is where you'll have access to all my workshops, coaching, and pearls. Just head to my website, www.payalghail.com. That's PayalGhail, and join my list. I can't wait to meet you.